my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey, wrestling fans. Welcome back to my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. This is episode 311. It is the first Monday of a new month, and that means it's time for Two is Greater Than One, and my guest co-host is Tyler Heath Hatton of Stride Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about a couple different things today, but we're going to start off, as we always do, with what's going on with Stride Pro Wrestling. Tyler, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. For you guys that were listening to my wife in the background, I apologize.
It's all good.
Decides to roll a bag of chips right next to the phone.
It's all good. So how are things going?
Things are going good. We are, still there. So we just had the, we haven't done anything since the DuCoin show. And so for those of you that missed it, I'm sorry. So as far as moving forward, we have the show, we're coming back, it's a drop on Monday. So this Saturday.
Yeah.
But other than that, we are actively, I hate to say it, but we are actively taking donations from people that we are giving to, the owners of the building. This isn't lining my pockets or Kevin Huntsberger's salary anymore. This is about, keeping our doors open, being able to stay there, and, this virus has, hit everybody at this point now, and, businesses alike, and we are no different from, any other business. And so the fact that we are, a company that is based off of crowds.
Yeah.
This is not the time to be in that business. And there's just, and without being crowds and we're just saying if anybody has the extra or anybody wants to donate so we can keep doing the tapings and having a small amount of crowds and we are definitely taking those donations and they are going, straight to the owners of the building and they're not like, don't worry, they're not going in my pockets.
Because
I'm not using it for myself.
Yeah. Obviously we rent a spot in Carterville, Illinois. We do have a show this Saturday night, November 7th. So we encourage fans, obviously we can't have the big massive crowds like we had, a year ago. We're coming up on the year anniversary of AAPW Resurrection, where we had over 600 fans. We can't do that right now because of this virus, but those that can come, we would appreciate the support. And, even if of potential sponsors or, just sharing the word about Stride Pro Wrestling, going to the Pro Wrestling Tee store and buying a Stride t-shirt, all the proceeds from those shirts go straight to paying for the water bill and paying, if there's any extra, it goes toward paying the rent. But the shirts sell very, very slowly as well. So one way to show your support is buy a $20 t-shirt, and then a portion of that goes back again to Stride Pro Wrestling. You can go to prowrestlingtees.com/my123cents. And again, this is all going to keep Stride up and running, and hopefully 2021 we'll be back on more solid footing. And, we'll be able to do more things and have the fundraisers again and do those bigger shows, because the between the fundraisers and just having live crowds, Stride Pro Wrestling, as you've said before, has always turned a profit necessarily, but hasn't lost any money either. But you know, right now we're renting, and the owners want money as well because they have lives and whatnot. So if you are so inclined to make a donation or even just share the word, a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, all the wrestlers right now, you know, myself included, are working for free. You know, we have the training school, and that has helped. You know, what worries me is, you know, for me being a business owner is, you know, the winter is cold. And so the, you know, electric bill is going to be higher. And, you know, and so the, you know, it's just things that add up without having a crowd, without mm-hmm. having people. And, you know, we had talked and Illinois went back a phase. And so, you know, should we cancel the show this weekend? And, but it's one of those things where it's, you know, if I cancel it, then we probably are done. You
right.
know, put a fork in us. So, you know, it's definitely catch 22 and, you're kind of a bad guy, whichever way you choose to go.
Right.
And so, you know, we've had so many fans and people message, you know, just begging to come back and begging to be a part of it and get to come. And so now I'm going to start, we're really going to start pushing the birthdays again and stuff like that, just to, you know, and you know, the TV show that we made on YouTube, mm-hmm. you know, I've gotten so much feedback from it and people messaging and asking, you know, just how good of a job we've done, which I didn't think that was going to happen. So, kudos to Kevin for putting all that together, and to the wrestlers for, you know, doing it and you know, the promos and everything that they did. And that has been, you know, without that, I don't know if Stride was, if that wasn't a hit and wasn't so successful, I don't know if we would still be going. So I'm very happy with the way Stride has went as far as the tapings that we
yeah.
did. That was, in my opinion, that came over a lot better than I actually thought that it would.
You know, and that's a good point because I, you know, my friend Chad, who was here for one of those tapings and did some backstage stuff, you know, he introduced me to a company called Wrestling Pro Wrestling out on the West Coast, and they have pretty much shuttered since COVID has hit. They've done one virtual event, but, you know, a credit to you and to the team, at Stride, because nobody's getting paid to do these shows right now. And so it tells me what wrestling means to them, because I don't think anybody has balked and said, I'm not coming or I'm not doing this. You know, you've had the support from inside the locker room, which I think has been a testament to what you have done and what you have established with the trainees and then with your friends who were already wrestling before coming to Stride, if that makes sense. So I think that we have built a family, we have built a sense of community, and that has spilled into our fans as well. So right now, if you are listening to this, and we're going to talk about other things in just a few minutes, I promise, but we would really, you know, appreciate that support and moving forward. And so, again, if you are able to donate or give a little extra when you come and buy your regular ticket, or if you, you know, maybe you can't make it and you don't have plans for this Saturday night, so just donate that $10 that you would have spent on a date night or whatever the case may be. You know, just message the Facebook page and someone, probably Tyler or myself, will reach back out to you and we can figure this out. But it really, I want to thank everyone, the fans. There are, you know, we always talk about those small groups of diehard fans. Our small groups are getting larger. As far as those fans go and that support. And it means the world to us and to me to see that. And also to the guys and the gals who are listening to this, who are there every time we put on a show. And, you know, nobody is cornering you and saying, when am I getting paid again or anything like that. So I appreciate all of that support internally and externally from our fans.
Yeah, I'm the same. The fan base that we have, you know, it's, there's now to a point to where when I do these tapings, I message the same 20 people that I know, you know, that they get first dibs and they're going to want, you know, seats. And in all honesty, I think if I was to run a show, you know, that I could run a show this weekend, I think we'd have 200 or 300 people there.
Yeah.
If I was able to, the amount of people that have messaged me, right now I'm stuck. I was just telling, Rachel yesterday, like I'm wondering if I should just tell them we're full. I can't take it anymore. Because I'm one of those people that's just, I want to be safe, but I don't want to get in trouble.
Right.
I'm very stuck on, what do I do? We're planning on, this time, if you are coming, we're doing temperature checks. You will be required to wear a mask. If you cannot wear a mask, you'll be asked to leave. we'll give you a warning, but if you cannot follow the simple rules, you'll be asked to leave. So we are going to try to that maybe add a little bit more in, mm-hmm. and see kind of how that goes. It's just, like I said, it's when you're only having 40 fans, or whatever inside, that's, that barely covers the rent. So,
right.
Every little bit, helps and like I said, I didn't realize this. A couple of the people that had messaged the Stride page, I had got to talking to, and they had first came to Stridiversary, and so they had kind of messaged me, and they had said, "We have been waiting and dying to come to a show since Stridiversary." So, and then I realized, we haven't really ran a show since Stridiversary.
Right.
So, it was. Stridiversary, it sucked because of, we had the heating issue and the building issue, and it was kind of falling apart, but really overall it was a really good show.
Right.
We never really got to talk about it or sit back and look at it because of what was going on at the time.
Stridiversary was March 14th, and then literally it was a Saturday, and then literally that Monday everything closed, or the announcements about closing everything started. And so that's when we kind of pivoted. We did run Stridiversary live on our Facebook page, so you can go check that out if you're curious about what Tyler's talking about. But then it was almost, then we came up with a plan to record the shows and put them on YouTube, which November 7th show will be there as well. But we really, if you are, like Tyler said, message the page, check on tickets, if we have anything available. But, we are going to run the temperature checks and ask people to wear masks. So if you are listening to this prior to Saturday night, please just help us stay complicit and not, because the last thing we want to do then is to deal with a fine. Then that would definitely be the death blow if we were to get fined because someone chose to ignore what we're just simply trying to keep ourselves out of trouble and keep people safe as well, obviously.
Yeah. So, I think for the most part, I think it should be fine. I will say that, I was, talking to, some other people, some of my friends, and they were asking, and, here lately I've been watching a lot of, older wrestling and like I've kind of been getting that itch again. And then the DuCoin show kind of helped a little bit being mm-hmm. in front of a crowd, but it was cold and it was outside. And we had a couple hangups that day, but anyway, we did that show and, with the project, the Project Port, people mm-hmm. and, or Progressive Port, I think that's what
Progress Port.
Anyway,
we know what you mean.
Yeah. And, but anyway, we did that and feeling that energy from the crowd, and kind of having, it sounds corny, but, having the lights off and the lights shining and the music playing, Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kevin in the ring with the announcer, like, it felt normal.
Right, right.
You know, for the first time, mm-hmm. and then they're into it, and they're chanting, and they are, you know, that, like, when I left, like, the next day, I watched wrestling majority of the day. So I kind of started, you know, it wrestling, you know, on the tapings, I kind of realized the last 5 years, once a week, I've pretty much had a practice match in front of nobody because I'm with the trainees mm-hmm. and I try to wrestle them. So it's really no different to me. Even doing the tapings was like, it was almost like a practice to me. And that doesn't feel like wrestling. And so being there in front of that crowd, that really encouraged me to want to get back to normal, to like want to have a crowd and want to get back to the way we were. Like, that was like, when I left and I was like almost in tears because I didn't realize how much I missed it. Mm-hmm. Like, how much just that feeling you get, you know, and listening to the crowd and hearing the crowd and like actually being able to work and move and do things based off the crowd noise and what the crowd wants and being able to improvise off the crowd. It's, you know, if you've never done it and you haven't wrestled, you don't understand that feeling, you know, but it really is. You can, on an indie show, you can change the way your match is going to go based off a crowd and the way a crowd reacts. And you know, like, you know, Daniel Eads, who is, you know, we don't really talk about him a lot on here, but, you know, he kind of my, you know, worked under me, kind of my protege, but also one of my really good friends. And, you know, he was, God, he's, you know, he's been the WWE more than I have, mm-hmm. you know, he's, you know, he's just a special dude, but he, a talented kid. But after we did that show, he messaged me and was like, every time you do that show, I want to come. Mm. Like, that's how amazing, like, that crowd was and how, you know, like, you know, I would take wrestling in front of that crowd over some of the crowds that are just, like, I was, you know, yeah. Red Daniels, he shared that video yesterday where me and him, we had a really good match, but the crowd was just quiet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a quiet crowd, and it, like, God, it kind of, it sucked, you know, in a way, because you hate wrestling in front of crowds that are quiet, and we wrestle in front of that crowd, and they are, and there's a big difference between, sometimes you have fans that try to hijack the thing,
yeah,
and, you know, those fans, sorry, Hunter, those fans are not fun all the time, because once you have somebody, you know, or you have people that do that, and that's wrestling, and you understand that, but they're not involved in the match. They don't care who wins and who loses. And so they, you know, they're not invested in what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to get a feel off of them because, you know, they're just trying to hijack the crowd. So you, when you have a crowd like that, that's invested, you know, they want to see Daniel Eads win. They want to see Jay Spade lose or Heath Hatton lose, whatever. So they get involved in the falsies. They get it, like, they love it, you know, and those are, you know, the great crowds to have because you can get a sense and you know, like, okay, I got them invested. They want to do this. So, you know, and I think that's kind of what's going to happen moving forward with wrestling, especially on the indies, is people are now, you know, they're just going to want to wrestle in front of crowds.
Right.
And they're going to want to, you know, because that's the one thing that I didn't realize I missed until we got in front of that crowd, is how much I just miss wrestling crowds, how much I, you know, miss that feeling of being in front of a crowd and then them just being just so invested. And, you know, it's, you know, it's like, and I, you know, one day at work, I went back, I think I sent you a snap, but I was watching Me and You versus, you know, Spade and Flood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I realized majority of that crowd, I mean, even the you know, Lane Austin, the referee, everybody thought we were going to lose.
Right.
And when I booked it, I was like, I remember when I was booking it, I was like, everybody's going to think we're going to win. That was mine. And
right.
We go, and then even the boys and the people in the back and the fans, they thought we were going to lose.
Right.
And so when we actually won, they were like, you know, that reaction, because nobody thought that was going to happen, because Kevin's undefeated. Kevin can't lose. Kevin is, you know, a mark for himself. And so you have all this, and then all the people in the back were like, wait, you guys are winning? And I can remember being like, I thought that it was obvious.
Right.
but people didn't, you know, I know I listened to your podcast, you know, with Chad, and Chad was like, oh, I knew you were winning. Well, I kind of figured it out. So I thought that's how majority of people felt.
But yeah.
It was the complete opposite.
And I think it was for the belts, and people didn't, you know, because it's like, okay, how do you book yourself out of this? You know, you can't have the announcer win the belts, but, you know, maybe a DQ finish or something, you know, screwy happens at the end or whatever. But yeah, I definitely remember, especially I remember Lane's like, wait, you're winning, you know? And, so I thought that was pretty, pretty funny that people were that, not confused, but, you know, it was good that you, cause I don't think a lot of, like, my wife didn't know until the week before we had gone out to dinner for Garrett's birthday, and Roger said, I can't believe this guy's winning the tag team titles. And Lisa turned to me and she's like, wait, you're winning? So she didn't even know. I never tell them what's going to happen. Cause I want that legitimate surprise. You know, I want that organic reaction to what happens. But, so my family didn't even know, or I hadn't told them until the cat got out of the bag, so to speak.
Well, like I said, it was with all that tied in together, yes. You know, Stride is, you know, it. I do think, I don't really like to get, you know, too political on here, but I just hope that eventually the tide turns, you know, people are trusted, you know, a little bit more to make good decisions, you know, and it is frustrating. I mean, me and Rachel went to, you know, Walmart last night, and I kind of made the comment. I'm like, God, like, you know, there are more people without masks than there are with masks, you know, and so that's frustrating, you know, and so you're wanting something to change that's just not, I think, not gonna change. And so it just comes down to, you know, the fact that we need to be trusted to make good decisions. Like, me and you need to be trusted to keep our fans safe and keep them distance and make sure everybody wears a mask. And I think, you know, that's what it's going to take is, you know, I'm a firm believer, and it's not going to go away and it's not going to get better. So we have to learn how to do it safely, mm-hmm. and how to treat. And if everybody would keep everybody safe, yeah, we would be able to do these things. And so I'm really hoping that that's what happens as, you know, the turn of the new year comes, where it's like, you know, I actually listened to, you'll probably make fun of me, but I listened to Rob Snyder on Chris Jericho's podcast.
Oh, okay.
And he was on there a couple weeks ago. And, you know, he basically said, you know, like, that the entertainment industry in Hollywood is starting to see it. These, you know, these millionaires are starting to see how it's affecting them, you know, and he says it, you know, best. And he's like, you know, I wish that, you know, people like myself and groups that are doing, that want to do shows and want to put on entertainment, that they're just trusted to make good decisions and trusted to do things to keep people safe. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. But then, you know, like I said, we're in Walmart last night, and more people don't have masks on that do. And, but I look at it, you know, I work in a school, and it's pretty cut and dry. You know, if you can't wear a mask, don't come to school. Mm-hmm. And if you refuse to do it and refuse to wear it right, refuse to social distance, you refuse to, you know, do these things, you got to go home. Okay, if you can't do those things, then you got to go home. And I think, I'm hoping that that's the direction that we start going, you know, where it's like, you know, if you can't wear a mask into a restaurant and go sit out and then take it off, you know, that's what they say to do, yeah. You know, and so then do it. And, but, you know, so hopefully that's the direction that we start to go and we're able to start, you know, doing stuff and then hopefully that once we establish that, you know, cause that's kind of the way it's been at our school. You know, at first it was kind of a fight, but once we established that, now they know, you know, I want to come to school. I want to do these things. And I think that's how people would be. I want to go to a wrestling show. I want to be there. So if I follow these rules, then I can do that. So if that makes sense, and maybe I'm just talking out my head, but that's the way I feel. And that's the way I hope that it goes. And so, because the last thing I want or you want or anybody wants anybody to get sick
right
by anything caused by us, you know? And so that's kind of why I've been, you know, the way I've been is I don't care if I get sick, you know, if I get sick and die, please put me as your profile picture for a while. You know, and hopefully Kevin will do a podcast thanking me, but, you know, but other than that, I would be like, okay, that's on me, but I would feel terrible if I had a wrestling show and somebody got sick and died from that wrestling show. That would hurt me more than, you know, anything else. So
yeah.
So that's where, you know, I'm at with that. And that's where, you know, I'd probably laugh if Kevin got it, but you know, that would just be karma. So
well, let's switch gears and talk about, again, you can check out Stride Pro Wrestling on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. So subscribe to the channel and follow the social media pages and keep up to date. And if there are any updates that are made between now and Saturday, otherwise we are planning to move ahead with Saturday night's show in Carterville. This month, November, marks a little bit of an anniversary for me and one for you as well, that we have a little more, another common link, if you will. You posted about it in October, and I wanted to talk more about it, more in depth, if you will, especially after watching Bound for Glory the other night. And that is TNA Impact Wrestling, and both of us have actually tried out with that company. Now, we've talked about your WWE tryouts and the appearances that you've made at WWE. I want to hear your experience with TNA and kind of share my experience as well, because I think that our circumstances are much different, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But it was 2012 for you, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
So how did that come about?
So basically at that time I was going and doing a lot of stuff with SICW. Uh-huh. And with Larry and Herb and those guys. And there was a guy there, and he pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, TNA, they're having their gut check tryout." And he said, I think you should go. And so I wouldn't know what it was. And it was actually, a guy named Jake Durden. And so I had messaged him because he told me Jake was going. Well, they told me Jake wasn't at the show for whatever reason, and I had messaged Jake. Jake was like, "I'm thinking about going," and so anyway, I said, "Well, let me know. I'm considering it as well." And then I called Larry, and Larry was like, "I think you should go. I think you should do it. It'd be a great experience." And then I knew, some people that, I was going to OVW at the time, and TNA was an OVW was a TNA, tryout thing at the time, or a developmental for TNA. And so I was talking to a few of them there, and they're like, "We definitely think you should go." And
this is on the heels of the Extreme Rules pay-per-view where you and Ace Hawkins wrestled Ryback, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I'd already done that. And so I went and so anyway, I just, you know, after talking to them and I talked to a few people at OVW and they were like, yeah, we definitely think you should go do it. At least let them see you or whatever. And so that was really just, you know, how it was I was, at that time, you know, I was getting booked a lot of places and I felt like it was, you know, I just wanted to kind of see. At that time I hadn't done my WWE tryout. So, and I hadn't really done a whole lot of tryouts. I hadn't really done something like that or camps. I'd done, you know, a couple seminars, but I hadn't done, you know, anything of that level. And so, I really just wanted to see where I was at. And so that's kind of how that came about. It was just, I contacted them, I sent in my information and, you know, the office called me back and that's how that went.
Now, did you have to, because when I tell my story, this question will make more sense. Did you have to pay for any of that?
Yeah, it was, I think it was $150.
Okay. Because I was beginning to wonder, because I did the same, it was the same exact price. So where did you have to travel for the tryout?
Mine was St. Louis.
Oh, okay. And so you get there and you're obviously, I'm assuming there's a lot of like kind of, because you mentioned SICW, which is just outside of St. Louis. This is before Stride or before Cape Championship Wrestling, but you have obviously had relationships with wrestlers in the Midwest and in the St. Louis area. So did you run into a lot of old friends when you were there?
So I know they had told us that they were only allowing, when I emailed in, they were only allowing 10 people.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know how many tried or what they're, who they were or what they're, who they were allowing in. But some of them you knew, like Mark Sterling.
Uh-huh.
He was there. And then a guy, he actually passed away a few years ago. His name was Shane Smalls. He did a lot of iCall stuff and he used to kind of run around with Farmer and those guys. And I actually did a thing with him, a feud with him at SNPW, Strictly Insane Pro Wrestling. But those were the only one. And then Gregory Iron was there.
Oh, okay.
And those were the only ones that I knew. And Jay Durden. So Gregory, Shane, Jay Durden and Mark were the only ones that I knew. And like I said, they selected 10 of us and I don't know, they had me send in promo pictures and then matches and stuff like that. And then they had selected 10 of us. And then there was a couple, referees that tried out as well. One of them, his twin brother was a referee for WWE.
Oh.
And he was there. They had allowed 10 of us in there and when we got there, they let us in backstage and then we got dressed and they already had the stage set up but it was a live show. It wasn't a tape show. And they let us, you know, they had us sign our waivers and stuff.
So this was an actual TNA show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There was a TNA show that night.
Gotcha.
And they actually, it was funny. One of the, I hate this, but I can't remember his name. But one of the guys, the producers for the show, had actually wrestled me before in Jackson, Tennessee for somebody else's show.
Oh, wow.
And we had wrestled each other. And then I had actually, I think it was, SNPW or someplace where I had done something with him as well. And so, I never asked him that day, but I'm guessing he may have helped me get in with these other 10. I'm not for sure on that. But anyway, he had came in, he had met me and he had kind of told me, what they would be looking for, and you know, and blah blah blah. And he kind of smartened me up a little bit, but like I said, I was more nervous because I had never, you know, I had, you know, when you're backstage at WWE, which I had done a couple times prior to this, you mean you're kind of in a suit most of the time,
right?
Eating catering, you know. So, you know, this was the first time where it was like, no, we got to see what you can do. So I was a little bit more, I was more nervous, and I did not, like, I didn't get the focus in and hone in because I was too nervous for this, for this tryout, because I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. So what you, so you just had a match then on this card, and that is, I'm guessing their producers or their team is kind of watching and evaluating how you're doing?
Oh no, so that wasn't it at all.
Oh.
So this was, we got there early in the afternoon. We got there well before the show. I think we actually got there at, in the morning. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got checked in, and I think we may have ate. And then from like noon to four or noon to five or something like that, we had this tryout. And they had us do rolls, and they had us lock up and do chains, and they had us do promos. And in the very end, they picked us to wrestle somebody. And it was funny because they took the 10 and they matched you up with somebody, and they matched me up with Jay Durden, of all people. And I had already, at that time, I had already wrestled him four or five times.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, this will be easy, you know? And so, you know, we kind of, that's what we had got, but they had us do drills. They had us do lockups. They, you know, had us do chain drills and just all sorts of, you know, cardio drills and push up and all this stuff. So they, I mean, it was a full on like 4 hour tryout of different things, promos, all sorts of stuff.
Wow. So how do they then make their decision? Like, how did you know then? Because were they looking for people to sign, or what was the end game? What was the goal of this tryout?
I was told after we went that the only person that ever got offered a tryout or offered a contract after the tryout was Crimson, Tommy Mercer.
Mm.
So I think they were probably looking, but it seemed more as it wasn't a tryout as it was like a seminar, because D'Lo Brown ran it.
Okay.
And, you know, and he kind of taught us, he gave us, you know, all things to work on. He gave us, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, I mean, it kind of really felt like more of a seminar than it did a tryout. And, you know, looking back, I mean, God, that was almost 10 years ago for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was so green. And I remember that was one of the things that he had told me. I was, you know, I had realized pretty quickly that I felt like, I kind of felt like I didn't belong at that point in my career. Even till this day, sometimes I'll send that picture to Jake Durden, and Jake was like, you know, we deserve to be there. We deserve to get signed type of thing. But I was kind of like, oh, I didn't really feel like I didn't perform well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back, you know, I was in over my head. I felt like at that time, and I know I'd already done the WWE pay-per-view and I'd already done some of that stuff. And I did a tryout, you know, shoot, this was in November, and I did my WWE tryout that January. So, I mean, but I kind of felt like I had never done anything of that level as far as tryout wise. And that tryout really helped me mentally be prepared for my WWE one. So, I kind of felt like, I just remember being so nervous the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and just being so like, you know, I can remember you told me, like, you were doing the TNA one and you heard that guy stand up with that big booming voice.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh crap, like I don't belong. Like type of thing. Like that's kind of, you know, how I felt, even though I knew majority of the guys and nobody had gotten signed out of there. But it was just being in there with D'Lo Brown and, you know, and seeing the guys backstage, you know, like Jeff Hardy was there and they were all kind of walking around backstage, seeing all them. And I don't know, I had never, even though I had done the WWE stuff, like I said, I was backstage. You have a practice match, you know, both the two times that I had went before then, I had a practice match, but it was, you know, I wrestled people that I knew. And I had really pretty much at that time, I pretty much stuck to local stuff at that time, SICW, AAPW, and then I would go to Tennessee and do, you know, Ripley, and I was going to OVW, but they really were just, like, what they were doing, letting me do at OVW at that time was learn how to work a camera, learn how to wrestle, how to move in front of a camera, and then my job, I was pretty much, at that time, I had abs, and I looked good, and so they kind of used me as an enhancement talent that looked good, and they would, I mean, luckily I got to wrestle some of the bigger name guys at the time, that were big stars for them at OVW, and they let me wrestle them, they let them guys go over on me, and I didn't care, I was trying to learn,
right. But
being at that with somebody like a D'Lo Brown who, you know, I mean, it was funny. I mean, he was talking, and all I could think about was when I was in like eighth grade, and during our eighth grade basketball warmups, and, you know, during when they would call us out, and you know, the starting lineup.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I had a kid on the team who walked out like D'Lo Brown because he was his favorite, and we all knew that, and so because we were all wrestling fans, and when he walked through the starting lineup, he walked like D'Lo Brown, and that's all I could think about was, oh my God, I'm standing in the ring with D'Lo Brown, somebody who I used to watch, and he was one of my friends, his favorite wrestlers, and here I am in a ring, and like I said, I was too green, and I was too immature for that. I couldn't even concentrate. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even, like, it was, you know. And it's funny because I had already done the pay-per-view and I had already done the WWE thing. But like I said, that wasn't drills. That wasn't blow-up drills. That wasn't conditioning. That was you're in a suit, go put on some shorts and a t-shirt and come and wrestle this guy.
Yeah.
And it was completely different. And I wish at that point, when I first started, I would have went to some of these. You really don't see them anymore. But back then, there was like Gerald Briscoe seminars or, you know, there'd be different guys doing seminars, not indie guys. It was, you know, WWE guys, Billy Gunn seminars or whatever. I wish I would have done some of those that I seen because I would have had a better idea of what they were looking for and I would have been better prepared. And I felt like I was just, like, at that point, I was just a little overwhelmed because I hadn't done stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, somebody from Stride, I don't remember who it was. It might have been Bo Sawyer. It might have been Red Daniels. Somebody sent me a text or a Snapchat that TNA Impact Wrestling was doing a seminar, a tryout in Las Vegas. This was back in 2018. And I would say this was probably in the early summer but it wasn't until November, but you had to sign up by like August, whatever. And I contemplated it. I talked to you. I talked to a couple of other people, and I contacted them to see if they were going to be bringing in announcers, because I knew I wasn't obviously going to go there to wrestle. And the guy messaged back, and it was part of this thing called Future Stars of Wrestling, which is based there in Las Vegas. And like Sin Bodhi and Jake the Snake Roberts, D'Lo Brown that you just mentioned, they are all connected to this training school, or, you know, kind of a indie outfit in Vegas. So they were TNA was coming to town for 3 days to do TV tapings, and they were going to take some of the talent from this tryout and use them for, you know, their 3 weeks of shows that they were going to put in the can. So, excuse me. So I talked to another mutual friend of ours, Brandon Toll, who is a referee at Impact Wrestling. And he actually told me, you know, put together some of your announcing on a tape, but don't make it from an iPhone. Use an actual professional camera. So I borrowed a camera from the TV station that I was working at the time. Jamie Woodworth actually sat in the front row and recorded me. And I put together some of my anchoring and then sent it to Brandon. I was doing things to kind of get their ear before I got there, because I didn't know who all was going to be there, what was going to happen at this thing. Well, we had also had Abyss on a Stride show about 2 weeks before I went for this tryout. And I pulled him aside and talked to him. And he gave me some advice and kind of told me some things. So my wife and I fly out to Vegas on a Friday night. The tryout is Saturday morning. And again, I don't know what to expect. I get in an Uber, go to where this is, you know, the address that they had given. And it's like it's in an industrial park. And there are all these other little businesses nearby, but nothing is open. And I get there and nobody's there yet. I got there early because I was so nervous. So I end up walking down the street to get something to eat, because I hadn't eaten yet. So I had something to eat, walk back. And by then, guys are starting to file in, and they, you know, wrestlers, referees, managers, you know, you've got the whole gambit of talent there. And the first part of this was a seminar that Scott D'Amore and Sanjay Dutt were kind of hosting. And so everybody kind of sits around in this room. It's hard to describe it. There were two rings set up, and the room was not very big at all. There was enough room to get maybe two or three people to walk down the one side with where the wall was. And the other side, there was room for like one person to get through. And then there was a big row of bleachers, and that was it. And then they had a garage door that opened up to the back. And that's where everybody kind of paired off and started planning out their matches. And they were giving everybody 5 minutes to wrestle. And there were three announcer candidates there. So like Tyler said earlier, when this one guy stands up and talks and asks a question during the seminar, I was like, holy shit, this guy's voice was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to compete with this guy. But, you know, I felt like I was the most prepared in terms of when I got into the ring, you know, the way I was dressed. I went conservative and wore a regular suit. I had ordered ring cards that had the Impact logo on it. So then I was, you know, because there were probably about 25 or 30 matches that day, you know, these quick little 5 minute matches. And so we would just go through and we would take three at a time and then, you know, take turns auditioning of sorts. And so I had all my stuff written on these TNA cards, and I thought, you know, maybe that'll give me a leg up. I don't know. Anyway, this day goes on forever. It was originally supposed to be for 2 hours. Well, the seminar went for an hour, and then you've got all these little 5 minute matches going on. And I didn't bring anything to drink. I didn't bring anything, you know, I was ill prepared, and there was nothing there because it's this little industrial park and everything else was closed on a Saturday. I just remember like being hungry and mostly being thirsty, and you know, you're talking and your voice gets, or your mouth gets dry. But come to, you know, it ends. And I went up to Sanjay Dutt afterward because, you know, nobody pulled anybody aside. I didn't see them talking to anybody to say who's coming and who's not. And I had my eye on these other two announcers, and nothing ever got said. And so I talked to Sanjay Dutt for a few minutes, and he goes, oh man, I really liked the cards. That was a nice touch, blah, blah, blah. And then that was it. And I'm like, okay. So it was that letdown of knowing, okay, so now I've got three more days in Vegas because, you know, when we bought the air tickets, I bought them, you know, optimistically thinking, okay, I'm going to get this call back and we're going to stick around, but it didn't happen. And it was very disappointing. And, but then I come to find out they had already had one of their wrestlers on this FSW show who wasn't at the tryout, who was going to be doing the ring announcing for these set of tapings. So that was disappointing. And, you know, like I said, I spent the $150 for the seminar and the tryout. And then, you know, you add in the flight to Vegas, the hotel, and then all the extra stuff that went along with that. So it was disappointing, but it was fun. It was a good experience. And, you know, I met some great guys at this event. Like I said, there were probably 10 or 12 referees. There were a handful of managers. And then I don't know if you've ever heard of Alex Hammerstone, but he is an MLW, and he is I can't believe he hasn't been signed to WWE. He's got that WWE look for sure. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him on a bigger stage sooner rather than later. But I ran into D'Lo at this event as well, and I had met D'Lo 7 years earlier when I was still at WSIL. He came on to promote the base brawl at Rent One Park during that summer, and he remembered me, which I thought was really cool because we've texted back and forth a few times, and I think I actually texted him about you one time. So that was neat that he remembered me and whatnot, but, you know, it obviously wasn't enough to stick around. But to me, anybody that goes after a dream like that, and as far-fetched and as silly as it sounds, because, you know, I was taking time off from my quote-unquote real job, actually jobs, because I was working part-time at the place that I'm at now full-time. And I remember kind of talking to these people and telling them, yeah, I'm going to Las Vegas to try out for, because they're like, oh, what are you going to Vegas for? And then I'm like, well, you know, I'm trying out for a wrestling company. And then expecting people to kind of laugh at you, but they didn't. You know, it was nice to have the support here at home. And you guys were actually running a Stride show that weekend too. And that was the same weekend that Lane got his kidney and pancreas transplant. So there was a lot going on, and I just, even though it didn't go the way I wanted, I look back on that and remember it fondly. And, you know, I would have regretted it more not going than I did going out there and trying out for it. And I would assume you kind of feel that way too. Like, you know, like they say, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And you've always been kind of that guy that goes for it when you need to and want to. So, you know, that's kind of my tryout in a nutshell.
It's, you know, for me, it was, you know, it's like me and every time I see Jake, we always laugh because, you know, me and him, you know, we had an okay match. You know, I remember he busted me open.
Oh.
And the lip, but he forgot the finish, and so the finish was screwed up, and it was it was just bad all around for me and him, and like I said, he had forgot a couple spots, and they were his spots, and the end was you know, it was funny. It was supposed to be, he hits a choke slam, and he's cocky and arrogant, and he goes for the cocky pin, and then I do a crucifix roll up.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, he hits the choke slam and he's cocky. Well, he double leg pins me, and I knew he had forgot.
Oh man.
So I'm like, D'Lo, they didn't care who went over. He said, you guys can decide.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, okay, like he'll just win. He won by choke slam.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to kick out. Well, as he's pinning me, I think he realizes what he's done.
Oh no.
So Jake just stops and lets go, and I don't kick out.
Oh shit.
And then we had to go come up with another finish on the fly, and so we were given, I think they had given us 7 minutes, and you couldn't go over your time. And we were right on time, but then we ended up going 7:30 because we went like 30 seconds over because of the botched finish. And I can remember D'Lo kind of getting on to me about not kicking out, and you know, and he was right, but in my opinion, I was like, D'Lo doesn't know who's winning. Nobody else knows who's winning. Only me and Jake know who's winning. So, you know, not even the ref was smartened up on who was going over. So, you know, I was kind of like, it's fine. He'll just win 1, 2, 3, and I won't kick out. And then Jake let go. I didn't kick. So it looked bad. So, you know, and I had kind of, you know, I got a, you know, not really a butt chewing, but just how bad that looked. And then, you know, afterwards, I can remember D'Lo actually pulled me aside, and, he gave me a lot of, really good, encouraging feedback. And I'll just remember he told me, he was like, when I walked out, he said, I was like, dang, you know, this kid's got a look. I remember that's what he said. That was the first thing he said. And he kind of told me, you know, he had said, so you had done, you know, he had known about the WWE tryout, and he had, or the WWE pay-per-view. And at that time I had already kind of received, I can remember the week before the TNA thing, I had got an email from WWE, and they were, you know, wanting more information because they were going to have this private tryout. And so I had, you know, kind of told him, I said, well, you know, he asked if I had heard back from him, and I had told him, and he said, the way you look, you know, he said, you're in great shape. You have a really good look. And he's like, you're a good looking kid. You know, he was like, they're going to, you know, just from that look alone, they're going to bring you in. But he's like, you have to sharpen up your in-ring skills. And he was right. At that point, I had realized, and I, you know, I realized pretty quickly that I'm just a firm believer in, you know, and he had kind of alluded to this. So he actually came in golds whenever they had came, when TNA had came to Marion.
Uh-huh.
And him and Robbie E had come, and they had sat and talked to me. And I can remember they both had told me, both of them, that, you know, you can't make it to a bigger level if you don't work or train with people that have been to that level at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at that tryout, that was the one thing that stuck out, was at that point, like, and we've talked about it before, and, you know, we've talked about the APW shows, like how I was, you know, I was never not mad at APW, but I was always frustrated that they would bring in names and I would never get to work them.
Yeah.
And I would never get to wrestle them. But I would go to these other places, and like SICW, like anytime they brought in Jim Cornette, they put him somehow in my match and I got to do something with him.
Oh, that's cool.
And so, you know, and I still have pictures of me and him and doing stuff where he was in my corner with the rat, you know, just stuff like that, that they did for me. And, you know, looking back, and it was Herb and Larry had done that, because after every time Jim Cornette would pull me aside and he would tell me, you got to do this or you got to do that, because I'm the type of person, it drives my kid crazy. I don't want to know the things that I do right. I've never been that type. If I do them right and I do them and they look okay, like, I don't need to work on those.
Right.
Because I've already got that down. I want to know what I suck at, what doesn't look good, what looks bad, like what I need to work on. So, you know, a lot of what I've realized training and teaching kids to wrestle is this generation, a lot of those kids, they don't want to know that. They want to be told the things they do right, the good things.
Yeah.
And I'm the opposite. And I think I'm that way because when you go wrestle at a bigger level, like the TNA or the WWE, they are not going to waste time telling you things that you look good doing.
Yeah.
Because they're going to tell you what you need to work on. And so you have to learn pretty quick, you know, what you got to work on and what you got to do. And that was one of the, you know, it's so funny because the WWE at that tryout, they told me they loved my promo and that I was a good talker. And I think, and we've always laughed, I'm horrible at promos. Oh my God. I mean, my ability to cut a promo, I think, is the worst on the indies. And it was funny that you go to WWE and that's one of the things that they put you over about and talked about. And even some of the boys at the, you know, the hotel were telling me how much they enjoyed my promo. And I'm like, oh my God, my wrestling must really suck if my promo made me look good.
Right.
But anyway, you know, that was, you know, so I think, you know, for me, it was, I learned pretty quick at the TNA one. That was my first eye opening that even though places like AAPW or these other places were giving me main event spots and main event on the TV show, I wasn't getting to work against like what I needed to work at to be prepared for this level. And, you know, and I realized too, I was going to OVW, but I was only getting 5 minutes or 6 minutes. And I was pretty much getting two moves in and the rest of it was them. And I was being used but that helped me learn how to be a character, how to tell a story in the ring and actually how to work a camera and so that I'm very thankful for that. But, you know, D'Lo had really told me, you know, he goes, you know, I can tell that you're talented and you're good, but you have, you know, you got a long way to go. And I realized at that point, like, I got to get out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go be told that I'm crappy. I have to go wrestle against people that are way better than me. And that's when I really started traveling and I really started going. And you know, and I had already, at that point, you know, I'd already worked Adam Pearce. So I had reached out to him and Adam had put me kind of in contact with some other people. And that was when I really started working against, you know, bigger name people. But I also started going back to Almy. I started going there regularly because I knew what I needed to work on. And so I started at that point focusing more on wrestling that I wasn't comfortable doing. So the TNA thing for me, I can remember leaving it. And I think I've told you this before. I know of about five different wrestlers that have been to WWE and done a tryout or done a TV, and then they quit afterwards or they've taken a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've talked about this, and they always say they're injured or they always say something happened, but they always take a break. And I think it is because the harsh reality of being told you're not good at something.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of guys at Stride, they'll ask me for advice or they'll ask me to tell them stuff. And when I tell them, they don't like what I have to say. And I'm like, and I always kind of laugh and I'm like, oh my, you guys could not last a minute, you know,
right,
one of these tryouts that me and you went to, because it's, you know, they don't sugarcoat it.
No.
You know, and they don't, you know, it, you know, like you said, I mean, it, you didn't go in thinking you were going to get a TNA announcing contract, but when you're talking to somebody and they don't say, we want you to come back, or it is disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
It is like, it's that feeling of I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I feel that way, I'm like, okay, I got to work harder. Like, I have to, like, I got to work harder at this. Like, I got to find a way to find what they're looking for. I have to, you know, practice. I have to train. I have to push myself. a lot of people, what I've learned is they're like, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's being negative, or he doesn't see it. And it's like, I wish that I had somebody like myself that could give me that advice, because I didn't have anybody.
Right.
I didn't have anybody that was giving me advice. I didn't have anybody that was trying. I mean, to be honest, the person that was helping me out the most at that time was Shane Rich and Chris Hagstrom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Hagstrom putting us on TV, having a local show, letting me work the camera, was more beneficial than a lot of the guys, because they had never been at that level. They had never. So I didn't have anybody. So my TNA Impact tryout was beneficial in opening my eyes, and it really prepared me, you know, for the WWE tryout, and it really prepared me for, okay, like, you have to be able to go out and get out of your comfort zone, and, you know, you got to work on your work rate. Because I, looking back at some of those matches, I wasn't, in my opinion, I wasn't a great wrestler. I wasn't where I needed to be. And I didn't have direction until I went and D'Lo Brown pulled me aside, told me, this is what you got to work on. This is what you suck at, and work at it. And that was what I needed to hear. And so, the last 10 minutes of the tryout, the whole seminar, the whole tryout, the whole everything, I felt lost. I felt confused. I felt out of place. I felt crappy. But the last 10 minutes talking to him was worth the whole 4 or 5 hours to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's those little moments that go a long way, for sure.
But overall, like I said, it was a great experience. I have nothing but, you know, good things to say. You know, at the time, I can remember leaving and just being frustrated. And feeling like I wasn't, you know, that I wasn't good enough. But then once again, I pulled it in, and actually, it's funny because, like I said, I met Shane Smalls there, and then we went on to have a feud at SNPW, and so I got to know him, you know, before he passed, and that was, I took that away from it, and then also having Jake there, and then getting to actually wrestle him was great for me too. So.
Well, that's good. And I appreciate you kind of diving in and sharing that story and your experiences with Impact. And we will, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, check out Stride Pro Wrestling on social media and stay tuned for updates and, other announcements and things that are going on. Tyler, as always, thanks for being a part of this week's show.
Well, you're welcome, even though you told me the other day, this is my podcast.
It's our podcast. It's our podcast. So, friends, thank you so much. And again, be sure to join us and check out the My123Cents social media as well. More announcements coming up there for some things that I'm working on as well. Have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.